It's time for Lickin' on Lending.
Welcome, everybody. Good to have you with us.
Welcome to Lickin' on Lending, a weekly mortgage market update providing up-to-the-minute information on interest rates, loan programs, and hot industry news all related to the mortgage industry. Brought to you by Transformational Mortgage Solutions. To participate in today's program, our guest call-in line is 646-716-4972. And now here's your host of Lickin' on Lending, David Lickin.
Let's begin.
Merry Christmas. I hope this day is a blessing to you, that you join friends and family.
It's the most wonderful time of the year.
Good to have you with us, everybody. Ho, 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 we're getting close to Christmas. 2019 means we're wrapping up the year, and a lot of us are looking forward to what's going on in the future. I'm looking forward to the hot topic segment. We're going to be doing, first of all, a best of. So we're going to be not having our normal, but it's a Christmas edition of our podcast. We're going to be having Brittany Hodak on, who I recorded an interview with this last week. She is just, I met her 6 months ago at the Housing Wire Engage Conference. She has a great story of how she started out and how she connected with people and what she's doing. I think you'll really enjoy the interview. And then also we're going to go back and do kind of a best of. Our producer and kind of does so much for the make this podcast, putting together kind of a best of. Really excited to have a review of all the topics. Anyway, this podcast is created by mortgage professionals, and it's for mortgage professionals. That's you, our listening audience, and we're just so thankful to have you as our listeners and sharing the message of what we're trying to get out here around the industry. We are so widely listened to, and we're so grateful. It's been only accomplished by you sharing it virally. So thank you. Our commitment is to bring you timely information in an audio format that you can listen to anytime and anywhere. Also, I want to say we're proud to be a part of the Industry Syndicate. They're a great organization. Check out all the podcasts on industrysyndicate.com. Anyway, special thank you to our sponsors, the Mortgage Bankers Association of America. So grateful for all that they do to keep our industry healthy and vibrant. Also to Black Knight, who is the developer of the Actionable Intelligence Platform that delivers data that drives growth and reduces costs. Also, Open Mortgage, leading buyer of reverse mortgages. That's a big product. The Heckam loan is one that can bring you so much income. It's also, Open Mortgage is also the home of one of the top LOs in the nation. Finastra, the Fusion Mortgage Box solution, automatically addresses compliance issues as well as enhancing borrower satisfaction, increased productivity. Just went through a demo with one of my clients who's selecting a new LOS, and they were just very impressed with that product. Lots of new enhancements already, and there's more on the way shortly here in the first quarter. I think it's even before that. So make sure if you're looking to make a change in the LOS, check out Finastra's product. Got some new things going on. Very, very impressive. But the POS and LOS combined just make for a nice integration, all-in-one solution. Makes for vendor management a little bit easier. Also, Lenders One and the Mortgage Collaborative, both of these co-ops do a great job of helping you connect in a meaningful way with leaders in the industry. And they talk about one of the things that, I was talking to David Kittle the other day about their collab, what they do on the peer analysis. And it's really having a big impact on those that participate. Lenders One does the same thing. Again, peer data, so important. Lenders One gathers out all that data up and shares it with its members. Encourage you to check it out. In fact, I just got a call from our representative at Lenders One. So big shout out to Deborah Whitehead. Appreciate her and all the colleagues at both of these companies. It's also CMLA, Community Mortgage Lenders of America. Grateful to have them here with us, as well as Velma, Knowledge Coop, VendorSurf, the new way to check out vendors. Check them out. VendorSurf.com, and Vidyard and AI Assist. And we're about ready to add two more new sponsors. Very excited about all of this, but a special thank you goes out to Alice, Andy, Alan, and Joe for their contributions to this podcast. Les Parker's here with us with this week's TM Spotlight and the macro view of the market.
TM Spotlight Soundbites is brought to you by Ainsworth Advisors. Jay just wants us on our own. More than markets ever know. Make your wish come true. All we get for Christmas is loose. Jay Powell's Federal Reserve believes in U.S. growth and its workers, so the markets are on their own. Live free with no Fed next year. Imagine no intervention. I wonder if you can. No need for ease or tightening. Free capitalism for man. Let rates go up. That means jobs are up. U.S. business activity is up. Trade activity is under a new World Trade Order, and the old WTO, World Trade Organization, is out. Make our wish come true. Powell, all we want for Christmas is loose. These views are my own. Go to tmspotlight.com to subscribe to my daily newsletter.
I love that music. Oh, cracked me up. Les, great job. Gary Canterbone. Love the team of how you guys team up together. Anyway, we're going to go back and do kind of a best of. Our producer does so much to make this podcast, putting together kind of a best of. Really excited to have a review of all the topics. So without any further ado.
We are now entering the largest expansion, meaning a period without a recession that we've ever seen in the United States. They typically don't go this long. You know, there's a lot of reasons maybe that this has continued, whatever, but it's not a matter of if you're going to have a recession. The question is simply when, because you always have recessions. It's a cyclical economy. And when you do have that recession, what can the Fed do to get us out of the recession?
So big earthquakes create big problems. And when the Federal Reserve creates a calm environment, low volatility, we're deferring problems.
So really, when you take the movie you're talking about, which is famous for Always Be Closing, I would tell you the mantra today should be always be connecting.
I'm watching them make a migration. You are watching an absolute broker migration.
It means people have business models that are weak because they've been sloppy.
Folks, I want you to be aware of this. Listen to these numbers. Shashank, not originates, closes 25 plus transactions per month with an average loan amount of $500,000. Do the math. That's $150 million in loan originations he funds personally each year.
Last year, there was $12 billion securitized in the non-QM space. If you look back again historically in 2000, 2001, this non-agency market was about $500 billion. And then, pre 05, 06, it was over $1 trillion. So we know, forget that number. Nobody's even thinking about that. But even if $500 billion is way too much, let's say it's half that. Okay, so it's $250 billion. Well, it was 12 last year.
Wow.
Look at the potential. And
we have a financial system that's weak because of all of this infusion of liquidity and this calmness.
This is a relationship-driven business.
More than just, okay, we need to get technology. I think every lender is trying to do that. But I really don't think they're looking at, do we have the right personnel?
So the director of wholesale development here, there's actually three of us, my partners, Jamie Brashko and Michael Walton. And what we do on a daily basis is that we are talking to folks that are looking to come from the retail world and open their own company and become an independent mortgage broker and broker owner for that matter.
The movement from zero to eighth largest lender in the nation. And now, have you overtaken eighth? Are you now the seventh? I mean, I know you're growing so quickly. Is it eighth? What is it?
I think we're number six or seven in the U.S. for purchase. We kind of track purchase a lot. You've been there every step of the way, man. I think a lot of folks have heard that story. If I typed in how to start a mortgage bank on Google, and you walked out, man. Yeah, we've been on this journey together for a decade, so it's been pretty special to share with you.
Yeah, so good.
In the big picture, I think within 5 years from now that we're going to have all the back office component, all of the really slotting of the loan gyrations that originators do, that is all going to be done by artificial intelligence. It's clear that they can do it better than at the loan officer level. So I do think we're at a real tipping point.
Tim, one of the things we talked about, now the reason why I wanted you to come on, so many people have watched that video that you have done, testimonial video you've done for us, and we really appreciate that so much. And people get this idea, man, they did it. They came from zero to nothing, and it must be easy because I think I can go out and do it too. And it wasn't without its growing pains, and it's that journey. And you and I are sitting in your office here recently, and what a spectacular office. Anyone else has to get a chance to go to the Movement Campus there in Charlotte, I encourage you to do so. It'll inspire you. took a video of it. We're going to put it up here for you all to enjoy and get to get a virtual tour of it. But when we were sitting there, we talked about this, and you said sometimes, Dave, it's just we don't open up enough through those difficult spots. And I remember that phone call, one of those difficult spots that came. You called me and you said, Dave, you know, we've lost some money. This is the early days. We're losing some money.
I'll tell the story for you, so I'll share all the dirty details. So it was yeah. We had launched the company in September of 2008. You know, we put our flag and we had gotten our full FHA approval, gotten our warehouse line, all those tough things that we all walked through together for that year. We're ready to do business.
Yes.
Hired underwriters, hired processors, planted a stake in the ground. September 2008. Let's go open our doors. And October of 2008 happens. And I just watched the HBO documentary again on the kind of Too Big to Fail, just that economic crisis time period. And we literally, you know, no one bought houses for 60 days. And all these great projections that Andy and I had worked so hard on a spreadsheet were not coming to pass. And we lost almost $100,000 in 60 days, our first 60 days in business.
Remember that.
And, you know, I was looking at the capital base dwindle. I said, man, this might have been the biggest financial mistake I've ever made. Going to bankrupt my family. You know, this was just a horrible mistake, right? And there was no prospects at that time in 2008, in October, that the housing market was about to pick up. I mean, we were on the verge in our nation of just financial collapse. And I had gone headlong into financial services. I mean, this could not have looked like a worse bet at the time. Yeah, and I called you and said, did not know what to do. I was really beside myself. And I think it's so important, man, right? That I've talked a lot about the joy in life is on the journey, not the destination. You know, the joy is the journey, and so much of that joy is the men and women you share it with. And you better have some people on your team that you trust and that you love and you know love you, because you're going to go through adversity. You're going to hit those times. And when you do, man, you need some people on the team to encourage you, to lift you up, and to tell you to keep moving forward. And that's what you guys did for me at that time. And, you know, it was
I'll never forget that.
President and CEO and mortgage broker and lender and loan officer, everything for Arcus Lending, Inc. Shashank, how in the heck are you originating 25 transactions a month in this market and growing?
So, yes, of course, as in growing is probably the key word here, because if you're not growing, then you will you'll become stagnant, and then you will start actually degenerating, as you will probably have lower numbers as the years go by, especially given in a competitive market. So also, Dave, note that I'm in San Jose, California. I probably the most competitive market in the country. It's definitely one of the most competitive. Everybody and their uncles and aunts want to originate in this market, given how the ticket size is. So your question about how do I originate $150 million, it's really, there's no one answer to it. But I think that as a loan officer, as a broker, as a manager, whatever you are in the mortgage industry, if you're on the origination side of it, really there are only three problems you're trying to solve. And if you solve it, could do 150 or even more. And those three problems are, number one, how do you get more people to call, email, basically contact you? So that's what I call lead generation. How do you generate more leads? And then the second problem you're trying to solve is that the number of leads that are coming in, how do you convert more? So how do you get more and more people to actually end up working with you, closing the loan with you? And then the final problem that you're trying to solve is that out of those converted clients, how do you get them to keep coming back to you, not just for themselves, but also refer their friends and family to you? If you really break it down at a very, very simple form, you are in a business of lead generation, lead conversion, and then generating more and more referral business. And that's how I looked at it, this business, very, very early, is that, look, it's not as complicated as it might seem. And if I can figure out the solutions to these three problems, I could become a big producer. And that's what I have focused on, even at current production volume, which, by the way, the first year I did $2.8 million. And then in about seven years, I was doing $175 million. So it's a very, very steep climb. In fact, the growth was so much, Dave, that my company, Arcus Lending, was named to the Inc. 500 list, which is the 500 fastest growing private companies in America. And there are like almost, 6 million private companies. To be named in the top 500 with almost 1,000% growth in 3 years is just crazy. But that's what we did as a company. We were able to do that is because I was able to solve those three problems to the point that where we could grow the business that quickly to that level.
On the originator side, I mean, it's really, really amazing. Like I said, these people that I had corresponded relationships with over the last maybe 5-7 years, I'm watching them make a migration. You are watching an absolute absolute broker migration. Now, again, I mentioned 2 years ago I started getting those calls.
Right.
I was telling my sales team, mark my words, you're going to see a decrease in the correspondent business and an increase in the broker business, which I said that 2 years ago. Well, today, I can honestly tell you, I am now at a 70-30 split broker. And it used to be 60-40 the other direction. So you are watching this migration. People that every single day you're hearing people making that changeover. And I think it's for a wide variety of reasons. You know, I don't think it's one reason. You know, you hear lots of different reasons. But I think, honestly, the biggest reason is right now they're finding it easier. You know, they're not finding these high barrier of entry. You know, people are kind of saying it's not that big of a deal to become a broker.
Yeah.
You know, it's very simple. And then, of course, we mentioned, you know, Arrive. Arrive is the new LOS system that is being built out. There's a whole nother level where you're going to have a technology. And, of course, AFR is one of the seven companies that in the initial stage that are going to be integrated into Arrive. But they're going to have a platform that not only will they have this amazing technology, it has a community feel. So they're getting both the technology as far as putting a loan through the system and not having to become experts in each lender's technology, which is great for the originator and for the brokers. But in addition to that, they're also going to be able to have the social media component and the video component, and it's really a step into the future.
I do have a story, but it's about Smart Reverse itself more. So Phil Risch is a loan officer, branch manager, longtime friend of mine. He's in Sun City. He's actually in Surprise, Arizona, which is right next to Sun City. So what you would call a target-rich environment for a reverse loan officer. But a lot of the people he meets have resistance to who is this person and what are they telling me about. And Phil has told me his experience, and I think it's a good strategy. What he's found is that if he opens up with a story, or two stories of, you know, I was recently helping Kathy and Richard, and their situation was this, and they had this equity, whatever, whatever, and he tells the story. That draws people in and opens them up to the idea, although a lot of times they're still resistant to be sold a bill of goods by Phil or by anybody else.
Yep.
And Phil is not pushy. He's a listener. He's a great guy. But when people have resistance, they still have it. So with Smart Reverse, he can give them the link, and they can go on in their own time and watch the videos and watch one, two times, or three times. We do micro-learning, which are 45-second, one-minute, two-minute videos, so they're easy, just little pieces. And then Phil can circle back, and they've got a lowered resistance. So the story opened them up. Then the online education fills in to the point where they say, okay, we need to talk to somebody, because you don't get a reverse mortgage from some website. You know, you need to talk to a loan originator. But he's found that that helps lower the resistance. And it's kind of nice because it takes away some of the education burden, if you will, from him and lets him be the expert filling in on top of that.
Now there's only one state test for loan originator licensing. Every state as of, I think, this last month, July or August, has adopted the uniform state test. So there's now just the national NMLS test for loan originators. And then on top of that, there's the education requirement, which is the 20 hours of federal education. And then about 30 or so states require a couple hours of state-specific education as well.
Well, the thing, and Jim could jump in here, I'm hearkening back to meetings that Jim and I sat in the White House with the head of the National Economic Council at the time. And he divided the room into hawks and doves on this exact subject. And the hawks were those that would argue that, look at other commercial markets, and you can look globally and domestically. They don't have a government backing. Why do you need it here? We would argue, and I think I was clearly put in the dove camp directly by the head of the NEC at the time. We would argue that you want to have functioning markets on both ends. But to your point, I know private capital is opportunistic, and it'll be in markets when spreads are right, and yep. it'll exit markets when spreads aren't.
To your point, we don't believe that everybody deserves a loan, but we do believe there are a lot of deserving people out there.
Great that, way to put
that,
it.
That don't have the ability to get a loan today. So, you know, let's just say it's a $150 billion a year market. We have 10 times growth based on 2018 securitization. So we just think the opportunity, we believe it's been kind of a niche product, but it's moving its way into a mainstream product, and we think it's here to stay because we're going to continue to originate it the right way.
One of the things that I've enjoyed with you is a tremendous relationship, and I want people just to understand all of that UWM, and specifically you at UWM, can do for the group. So let's just go ahead and tell us, why should people get a hold of you?
Yeah, I think one of the things is that, you know, not only myself, but you talk to anybody, Matt, all the way down through the whole leadership team over here. There's so many people that are so humble here. You know what I mean? I couldn't do what I'm doing without the folks behind me, but and teammates here. You know, there's almost 4,000 of us over here now in Pontiac, Michigan,
wow.
which is great, but and growing. But you know, listen, specifically what we do is that we take folks from that initial interest call and all the way through getting their first state license, and then we bridge the gap to get them approved here on our team. We have specialists right here to get them approved, and then they stay right on our team AE-wise because we've got some of the leading folks that are on our AE wholesale development team here that know our product, that know how to get a loan through here, and then also we've trained them now on how to bridge that gap from coming from retail to wholesale and the things that they're not accustomed to.
We're going to create through the non-QM, and you're right, by the way, you still have ATR in everything you create, but the bar is just different, right?
Yeah.
There's a different set of risks. And
exactly.
For most of lenders, one who haven't really originated non-QM at scale,
yeah.
you know, and they're smaller, you know, the risk or the unknown, I guess,
right.
I should say, of like what could happen if you get it wrong. You know, something you have to buy back or a penalty 5 years down the road is scary to a lot of people. So what we want to do is, as a component of our offering, is we're going to have education, first of all, about how to do it right.
Right.
We're going to assist in the manufacturing process. We're going to certify the loan by using probably an out-to-source-owned company, Trellix,
mm-hmm. yep.
which will do the underwriting.
Okay.
They'll certify the loan through Trellix, and then we'll use Castleline, which is another outsourced product
right.
to insure the product. So when it comes out, we'll basically remove almost all the manufacturers,
okay.
probably except for fraud, from the originator. So they won't have to worry about that.
Huh.
They'll have to focus on the things that they're generally really good at, which is finding and sourcing clients and getting them through, and let us handle the risk side of it.
Yeah.
That's really impressive. And that is a product for the lender one user or the member.
Right, that will be a product. It'll be a proprietary product for Lenders One members. Another great reason
okay.
that people should enjoy Lenders One.
That's exactly right. No,
exactly.
That's a true
value proposition right there. That's great to hear.
And it's been so rewarding. You know, I tell people, you know, we helped nearly 300 people last year. We'll help probably 600 people, just us, you know, on our team here. You know,
wow.
that doesn't count all the people are doing on their own. But, you know, it really is great. There isn't one deal that's the same, so to speak. You know, that's what's really rewarding from my standpoint. You know, it's, you know, when you come in and you pull a lever and you kick out a gasket, that's just never been me from that standpoint.
Yeah.
And you know, what we have going on over here is really just people we're bringing one man shops, we're bringing 10 man shops, we're bringing multi-state, you know, shops, and helping people navigate through the waters of, you know, starting their end, getting approved in their states, and then you know, getting approved with UWM. And it's not just getting approved with UWM. Yeah, we, you know, the group here falls up underneath the UWM flag, but you know, we help them structure. You know, we help them with their LOS decisions, with their credit vendors.
There's so many good data points, but what are the things that probably leaped out and took you a little bit by surprise, Mike?
Well, I think, you know, the high level information is interesting. People have probably heard it and sort of feel it, but when they can get down to a lender that's, you know, of their size with their business model, retail focused or, you know, broker wholesale focused. You know, whether they service or whether they release their servicing, you know, all those different breakouts, they can find a very, very appropriate benchmark and see how they're doing relative to other firms with a similar makeup and a similar business model. And, you know, that's just key these days. If you're talking to your warehouse lender, you're talking to your investors, you're talking to your staff about, you know, what do we need to attack first to be able to be, if not best of breed, at least sort of above average relative to some of these benchmarks.
I remember I got to sit with Admiral Mullen, who's the chairman of Joint Chiefs, and I was asking him about growing an organization. I think, at that point, at some point, a couple million active and retired duty servicemen and women essentially reported up to him. And I was talking about, hey, man, I think we'd gotten to 1,000 employees at that point. And I was explaining, it's always bright when you go to ask somebody for advice, tell them all the things you know first, right?
Yeah.
I started to pontificate to this incredible leader about how much easier it was going to be going from 1,000 to 10,000. Because it's just, the initial launch, right, getting the spaceship launched, that's you burn up all the energy and the breaking the atmosphere. And once you break the atmosphere, it's so much easier and da-da-da. And, it's going to be easier going from 1,000 to 10,000 than it is from 1 to 1,000. He just shook his head. So, no, you have no idea how much more difficult it's going to be, because you're going to start dealing with second, third, and fourth level leaders, and
yes,
you're going to lose your culture in the middle, your middle management, your middle leadership.
Wow, I remember this. Culture. Exactly. I remember.
Yeah,
this.
Remember exactly. This man? Yeah, and I heard him, like hearing Hendricks, like I heard him, but I didn't hear him. I had to think again, man. And my youthful exuberance and lack of experience, I went, okay, maybe that's true in the military, but you just don't have no idea how exciting this vision that we're embarking on is, and what we're going to be able to do, and all these kinds of things. And then you run into that. You run into, now I have to inspire third and fourth and fifth level leaders and align them with a culture. And the further down that goes, I had another great mentor tell me, you need to say less and say it more often, right?
Yeah.
The vision has to be more clarified.
Phrase.
And repeated more often, right, over and over again for everyone in the organization to get it and absorb it.
You maybe just share for a minute or two how important the adoption of technology is within your organization.
Yeah, 100%. So we do have, we're thankful that I'm one of the best technology leaders, I think, in all of financial services in the world, working with us. He's an amazing team member, amazing man. And what he's really helped us do is think about great partnership. We still believe in partnership. I Googled how to start a mortgage bank, and we brought in some partners to help us architect it, Andy and Dave. And, we still take that same position. If we want to be working with the best technologists, not in the United States, but in the world. So we signed a massive partnership with a company, Infosys, that actually built Marcus for Goldman Sachs. And they've been a super partner for us and really helping us aggregate folks like Blend. Nima Gamsari is a great friend of mine. We've done some really neat things together over the last few years, and others to think about how do we deliver the best process at the best price to the consumer. And to us, that looks like loving and valuing people when you're serving them well the way you'd want to be served. And I'll tee Andy up for his last question here, because it's the thing he encouraged me on when we first set the company up. I think our whole industry is still trying to figure out how do we leverage technology to create the best process and experience for the consumer and create a variable cost structure for the organization.
Right?
That
exactly.
You got to use for variable costs, because we've seen the last 60 days, this industry can really balloon and then contract very, very quickly, man. And we got to be able to better leverage technology to navigate those cycles.
Initially, everything was, they weren't even scanning, I don't think. And it started with being sure that everything was PDF, which they weren't used to doing. That was the first stage. Then they said, make sure everything's searchable. So PDF OCR is how we started with them, just to be sure that paper was out of the loop. Then they said, can you classify all the documents in a mortgage pack, because I don't want to have underwriting looking at it until all the requisite documents are in there. So you first make sure it's PDFable and OCR and compressed, by the way, so you can send it around the bank or whatever very easily. Then you want to classify and be sure that all the documents are there, compliance check or sanity check, before you give it to underwriting. But then, of course, they wanted to say, well, let's extract the data elements. So it went from classification, and also auto splitting. Can you split? And then, by the way, part of that was, there's multiple 1003s, can you find the one that's current? So it really morphed into, can you split them automatically? Can you find the relevant documents so underwriting doesn't need to look for them? Then, of course, there's about 500 data, fields, data elements we need to pull out for underwriting to price it. Can you do that, right? And then can you auto-validate and tell us when you know you got it so we don't have to look at it again? That's where you have auto-validation rates that are close to 90%. You don't need to look at it at all. And then the next steps, which we're still, working on, are, well, if it's a really low-risk kind of loan, can the bot do it by itself? Is that so that's really the evolution of where you start real simple. Let's just move from paper to be sure it's searchable PDF to classification, auto-splitting, data extraction, then classify it, and if it's low risk, can you actually, you know, do part of underwriting automatically? So that's sort of the evolution for this client.
Gentlemen, what advice would you give executives when transitioning to digital solutions?
Look, there is so many exciting things going on, right? So in a conversation with a lender, there are so many options that they could possibly do. We've seen some incredible work being done around remote closings. So, you know, obviously this is at the state level when we talk about remote closings, because the notary in that case is actually remote, not physically present,
right?
You know, with the borrower. And that is incredibly exciting. You know, if you've ever, you know, been involved in a remote closing, it really is, you know, an incredible experience, right? People are able to stay at their home or their place of business and still get that loan to get them into the house that they want. At the same time, you know, with all of these different options, what we see a lot of people is trying to boil the ocean, right? Try to do everything.
Right.
Or go with something that is absolutely the best, but something that can't scale necessarily across your operations. And so, you know, our recommendation, and we're sort of in a unique place to do that because we have a number of solution providers that sit on top of our platform that offer different types of closings. So, you know, if you want to remote, you can go with this partner. If you want to do it in person, you can go with this partner. If you want to just focus on the digital asset, you can go with this partner. And so we see all of these different things, and we're basically seeing that there is no one right approach for everyone right now. So we say, look at your business, consider how you operate in regards to an organization. You know, am I an IMB or am I a bank? Your geography, am I a national player or am I regional or am I, you know, down at the state level? What is my product mix? You know, am I conforming or am I VA lender? Really look at that and then determine what is the right approach for you. Not what, who's bringing the, you know, the shiniest widget, you know, at the time, but really consider where do you want to go as an organization? Because the facts are you can get incredible gain, but you're only going to get that gain if you're doing it at scale. And so that's where you have to figure
good
out.
Good point. Really good point. I understand artificial, I understand intelligence. How do you put the two together and how does it really work? And
that's an interesting story, and that's a story that I'm starting to hear on an increasing basis. So there's quite a bit of inertia going in this way. But let's talk about some of the key factors and strategies that the mortgage and lending industry needs to embrace to adopt, to get adoption and implementation, and in order to really, in my opinion, to not only just be competitive, but I think survive in the future.
Yeah, David, you know, you just hit, you know, the nail on the head. So, you know, there's a revolution that's happening, and whether it's, you know, we can take it outside of the mortgage industry, and, you know, even if you're talking about manufacturing and automation, you know, it's either the companies that adapt it, they survive and thrive, and the companies that don't, they get left behind. And so this is happening now in the mortgage industry. It's happening, you know, more and more, and basically, you know, getting conversational AI is going to save a lot of time and effort for those loan officers. So there's studies that show that the first person that speaks and gets in contact with a particular consumer wins the business 50% of the time. Because if you think about it, you know, the consumer, they, you know, they got to tell their story, they got to get on the phone, they got to explain it to a broker, and if the broker is doing what they need to be doing, you know, in a highly competitive space like the mortgage industry, where it is kind of a bit commoditized, you want, as long as you hit, you know, you get to a person that specializes what you're looking to do, maybe, you know, if you're looking for a jumbo loan or if somebody's looking for an FHA, as long as you get to that person, chances are, you know, you're going to get the business if you do the right job.
You know, we talked earlier about your technology background and the fact that you had spent as much time in technology. It would be really interesting to get your perspective and what changes you see in mortgage technology coming in the near future and then a little further out.
Well, David, I think in the next couple of years, I do see the day one certainty and the instant approval process getting much better within the next 2 years, and think that's going to move the needle. I'm really excited for the remote notary, the bills that are passing throughout the country, and what that will mean to closings. We've been a little slow in getting that technology completely squared away, but we think that we've got that done where we can go to about 20 different states and make that happen. And
it's noteworthy that Mid-America Mortgage pioneered e-closings and are currently doing over 90% of your loans are being done through electronic closings. I think that's another example of the leadership you have brought to our industry. What is the e-note, Brenda? You define it, and then Jack, you're a leader and one of the first to get into using accepting e-notes in warehouse lending. And so as a leader, I'm hoping your comments will inspire some of the other holdouts in the warehouse community from getting more involved. So Brenda, what is an e-note? Talk about how it functions, and then Jack, talk about why you started believing in it.
So as I mentioned earlier, first e-note was done back in 2000, and the industry looked at it and said, oh, that's nice. And then they just kind of went back to their paper environment. So we had two regulations that were drafted in 1999 and 2000. Those are UEDA, the Uniform Electronic Transaction Act, and eSign, which is the Electronic Signatures in Global and National Commerce. And what that does is provide for laws that whether your signature is in writing, wet ink, sign, or digital, the use of the electronic record satisfies a requirement that all of the parties have agreed to that transaction. And so what this electronic signature, such as when you go to Target or any of your grocery stores and you're signing on that signature pad, that provides a full audit trail of your receipt, your review, and your acceptance of the transaction. And what we did as an industry through MSMO is we created the MSMO Smart Dog. What a Smart Dog is it is secure, it's retrievable, it creates a transparent audit record. You can't alter the document because you actually execute the document in a secure signing environment. But what that has done for us as an industry is we have no more lost notes. We have no more documents that are getting altered at the signing table or replaced by some other document. And so it's enabled additional liquidity and security within the mortgage market. Fannie and Freddie began purchasing e-notes back in 2005 with a few originators. Through the last couple of years, we've seen a lot of dramatic growth within the acceptance e-note activity. We have a lot of significant technology advancements that have come to the market. So not only are we seeing the borrower able to execute the initial application and the disclosures at, you know, time of that initial application, but also we're seeing that extension of technology through the entire transaction and now enabling all of the closing documents or in a hybrid close, as many documents as your end investor will support. And so really we get back to why is this important, and having the ability to electronically create a secure transaction with an immutable data record, a full audit trail, is really important in bringing back liquidity and security in the mortgage market. We have a due diligence process that happens today between the originator and the end investor. It's pretty costly, somewhere between $600 and $800 per file. And if we have this full digital record that can be audited electronically, we now have an asset that theoretically will price better in the market.
Well, you know, really, David, the impetus or motivation for us to get in is that we wanted to stay, you know, on the forefront of technological advances in the mortgage space. You know, I personally believe that the mortgage industry is teetering on an inflection point, and the business that we do today is going to be radically different in 5 to 7 years from now. And you can either be an early adopter or you could be a lagging adopter. And I think if you're a lagging adopter, whether or not it's in the area of origination or warehousing or even as an investor, it's going to cost you volume, and that's going to translate into profit. And so we wanted to be an early adopter of this. And so, yes, we are banking e-notes today on our warehouse facilities. Moreover, we're also purchasing e-notes as a correspondent lending aggregator. So you know, I always tell everybody, you know, it's exciting. You know, we will bank your note, we will buy your note, and we have settled to both GSEs with e-notes.
And so Tony Davis worked for, you know, one of the major mortgage companies out there. They have, you know, 1,800 loan officers, and wow. he started using the system with us. And what he didn't have a, you know, direct-to-consumer business, because those tend to be, the company did, but, you know, those tend to be departments. His business was built on relationships with realtors. And so he used the system to reach out to realtors. And he was going, you know, he was one of the top performers. He was in the Atlanta region and, you know, Georgia. And he was going on about, you know, 3 to 5 meetings a month, you know, about one a week. And so he took the leads from the local MLS, he put it into the system, and, you know, he got just an overwhelming response. He actually, it's a funny thing, he took 12,000 realtors in his area, but he inverted the email and phone number in his CSV file. And so he only reached out to 6,500 of them. And out of the 6,500, he got over 300 to respond. So he went from meeting
wow.
3 to 4 a week to 20, 3 to 5 a month to 20 to 40 a week. And he actually had to pause his account because he's like, you know, I'm just wasting, you know, I'm wasting this because I can't meet with this many people. I'm meeting with several. He wanted to have coffee with them.
Until we have the ability to do E for FHA and VA, now it becomes a challenge for the mortgage originator, David, because they're going to have to run, you know, a bifurcated process. And nobody right. likes to run bifurcated processes. All that does is, you know, lower efficiency, and we already have costs that are too high, you know, to throughput a loan in our industry. So, you know, really that linchpin that needs to, you know, be put in place to make this more adoptable across our mortgage community is the successful implementation of this technology project or at Ginnie Mae. And so whether or not that's 2020, 2021, or 2022, it's coming, you know, but as I know from my own personal experience, no technology project goes in without some amount of pain. So I wish them well, but that is a key component to drive more significant adoption throughout our industry of e-notes.
If you're a woman and you walk into a room of a lot of men, or if you joined a company and you're a woman or you're a minority and you see the leadership team, there's really in a matter of seconds, they're going to tell you all that you need to know about the company. They will either reach out their hand, look you in the white of the eye, smile and say, "We are so glad you're here. And if there's anything we can do, and by the way, do you have just a second to chat and tell me a little bit about you?" You feel
yes.
appreciated. In that moment of just that small little gesture, you can illustrate a culture and why it's so important. Of inclusion of everybody, and the difference that you can make for somebody is lifelong.
You know, if you share your knowledge with them, that also helps, because as you're helping others, you're helping yourself. You learn more.
A quote that my mom has shared with me is, "When you get to the top, send the elevator back down."
What was it like growing up in a mortgage family? Well, you know, at CMG, we never miss escrow dates, because something that I also say is early's on time. On time is
yeah.
late, and late's never acceptable. And so when we had
That's
to be
right.
home for dinner, he always equated it to a close of escrow date. So we never missed closing of escrow date, and we were always on time for dinner. David, back to you.
Folks, this is a Christmas edition of our podcast. If you're listening live, just stay right on, because we're going to get right into the Hot Topic segment. If you're listening on a downloaded basis, we cut it off right here, and we start fresh and new with another segment. Folks, I'm excited to invite a public speaker to the microphone today in this podcast. And this person is someone who has created quite a brand for herself, and I want her to tell her story. I met Brittany Hodak at the Housing Wire event about 6 months ago, and we've been working on getting her on the podcast. We finally scheduled it. I'm so excited. Brittany, welcome to the Lickin' and Lending podcast.
Thank you. I'm so excited to be here.
For those that don't know you, you're getting well-known. You're certainly well-known within your circles. Those in the mortgage banking circles, I'm telling you, listeners, you need to get to know Brittany. So check out our website, BrittanyHodak.com. Brittany is spelled BrittanyHodak.com. Check it out. But Brittany, tell us a little bit about yourself. Do we just want to get to know you personally? For those that don't know you, tell us about yourself.
Well, thank you. Well, I am a speaker and an entrepreneur. I have been doing marketing for about 15 years now. Most of my background is actually in the entertainment business. So I'm relatively new to the mortgage and lending space, but have been so, so appreciative of the open arms that I've been welcomed with, and have just been having a blast getting to know more and more about the industry and all of the incredible people who work in it.
Well, it is an amazing industry. I love it. It's a stressful industry because we're working with one of the most stressful transactions in someone's life, buying your first home or you're refinancing your existing home. It's just so stressful it can be. But it starts with getting out there and getting your name out there. And you have just a gift, Brittany, of doing that. And I want to get into that part of your story.
So for the past year and a half, I've been focused pretty much exclusively on keynote speaking and writing because,
wow,
as I said, it's a passion point of mine. It's something that I really, really love, the ability to, you know, share all of this knowledge that I've gained over the past 15 years, which is teaching people how to create fans, and not just fans, but super fans. And I define a super fan as somebody who over-indexes in their affinity for your brand or service, which therefore increases the likelihood that they are going to advocate on your behalf as part of their everyday life. So, you know, in layman's terms, these are customers that create more customers for you. These are people who you wowed in some way with your customer service who are out there drawing more customers to you. So they become like this unpaid army of advocates out there that are just constantly referring new clients to you, which as somebody who has spent almost my entire career in sales, that's what you want, right? You want quality.
Yes.
Referrals from customers that are just drawing new people to you. And as I've mentioned, most of my background was in entertainment. I've worked with some of the largest musicians and biggest celebrities in the world on their personal brands, on product launches, albums, tours, movies, sports teams, all kinds of really high profile things. And what I started to realize over the years as my company, the Superfan Company, which I founded all the way back in 2010 and exited earlier this year, what I started to realize as I was doing more consulting for brands and retailers is that the same psychographic traits that make somebody identify with their favorite artist or their favorite actor or their favorite sports teams, those are the same types of triggers. Those are the same areas of our brains that light up when we're talking about experiences that we love or brands that we love or places that we love to travel. And more than that, it's the same activation in our brain when we're dealing with experiences and products and services that we enjoy. So I started to think, I wonder if some of these same tools and tricks and tips that I've been using for, you know, the past 15 years to help sell albums and get people to want to listen to a new song or come to a concert tour, I wonder if we can kind of reverse engineer these and start to figure out how to make it work so that somebody who's working in sales can create super fans for their own business to help grow their own brand, even though they're not a celebrity. Because, you know, if you think about it, one of the things that first started me down this path and thinking about it is music is such a personal thing, right? And if you think about your favorite artist, it doesn't matter how famous they are to anyone else. You don't care about how big they are. I mean, there's like a whole subset of people who sort of don't like the music anymore once it becomes mainstream or once the artist breaks out. Like, they want to feel like they're part of that discovery crowd or the early adopters who figure it out. But the level of fame or notoriety or success to the world doesn't matter to you. It's all about you and that musician. It's all about the impact that those songs have made in your life and the connection that you personally feel. And that's what's so neat about personal branding is you don't have to be the biggest or the most famous or the most well-known in your space. You've just got to have a really great one-to-one connection and a reputation for doing a really great job one-to-one. And that's why this idea of creating superfans is so powerful and why it really is a leg up to somebody who's, you know, getting into the mortgage industry for the first time or really any industry for the first time. It's saying, hey, you don't have to feel like you're at a disadvantage because you're competing against all of these people who have, you know, bigger name recognition or they've been in the market for longer. Just like there are new artists who come onto the scene all the time and new actors and actresses and athletes that come onto the scene all the time. They're not trying to compete with the most famous or the most well-known out there. They're trying to be the very best version of what they do and let people see why they're great, and then they create their own fans.
I think there's such a temptation to be someone else or try to be someone else. And I heard a speaker say, you know, that person's already taken, but there is no one quite like you the way you're wired. So be the best version of yourself. I love that. But when you started out, if I remember your story correctly, when you spoke at the Housing Wire Engaged Conference, by the way, I want to put a plug in for that conference. It's an outstanding marketing conference. And that's where I met Brittany and heard her speak. And while you were speaking, you told some stories of how you got started. And I admired your boldness and how you got started. You overcame those self-limiting arguments that so many people carry. Tell us one of those stories that you shared with, if you can remember back that long ago, one of those stories that you shared there. I was so taken back by it.
Sure. So, you know, I had the idea for the Superfan company when I was in college. And I was a college rep for one of the major record labels. And every week they would have these calls where they talked about the state of the industry, and it was supposed to be to sort of educate the college kids about all the different facets so you could decide if maybe you wanted to go into like A&R or marketing or publicity or whatever. And this was in 2002, 2003, 2004. So it was very doom and gloom in the music industry because Napster was like the big thing. And, you know, all of these executives kept saying, basically, hey, kids, go do something else. You're young enough to go, you know, change your career path. Don't come into our industry. It's, you know, it's a mess. Nobody knows what's going to happen. Go do something else. And after like the third week in a row of these calls, I said, well, if the problem is nobody's buying CDs anymore, why don't you just make a CD a product somebody would want to buy? Like, why would somebody want to get in their car, drive to the store, go buy this useless piece of plastic, you know, come home, put it in their computer when there's absolutely no increased value over just stealing it from your friend? Like, why would anybody want to do that? Like, I'm a college kid. I don't want to do that. So why don't you just create a product that people want to buy? So I had this idea of sort of merchifying music and taking the CD and packaging it with like a magazine with all kinds of exclusive profiles and photos and interviews and some sort of merchandise piece that would become a collectible. So that was my idea for this product, a product that I called Zine Pack, which was the idea of like a magazine package. And that would be the new configuration that we would release music in. So nobody really liked the idea. Everybody was kind of like, oh, that's cute, college kid. Like, you put your PowerPoint together. That was, you know, good job. And so
love those encouraging, not so encouraging conversations, non-validating.
Exactly.
Yeah, but that was a brilliant idea, though.
Yeah, well, and you know, that continued, like, literally for years. So I graduated from school. I went to go work for another record company. And, you know, on, like, my fifth day, I was like, guys, like, I built this, you know, I put together this business plan. I have this idea for a product. And same thing, everybody was kind of like, oh, that's a cute idea, but, you know, that's not really what we do. So after about 3.5 years of trying to get my idea to come to fruition at the record label where I worked, I went to go work for an ad agency. Same thing, I was like, I have this great idea. And by this point, because I had spent at that point, 5 years building all these relationships with retailers, I was like, look, I know this will work. I have proof of concept. I've talked to several retailers about it. Let me give this a try. And just nobody was willing to go out on a limb to see if it would work. So finally, I was like, I guess I'm going to have to switch jobs again, because one of the main reasons that I had left the record company I was at to go to the ad agency was I thought the ad agency would understand this model and would let me be sort of an intrapreneur, you know, working within the company just to do these big things. And when they didn't, I called, you know, the woman who was the Walmart buyer at the time, who had become a friend of mine. And I was like, I'm going to try to find somewhere else to go. I promise I'm going to figure out how to make this work. And she said to me, you know, Brittany, this is your idea. This is your baby. You've been telling me about this for years. Why don't you just start your own company? And I was like, I mean, I never thought about starting my own company. I don't even know how to do that. And she said, I know this is you. And I know no matter what company you go to, it's going to be you driving it. I would much rather see you participate in all the upsides. I'll give you a vendor number. I'll make introductions. I'll help you in whatever way I can.
Wow.
I really believe in this product. She said, if you can go get a record label to be the test case to try this and it's successful, I will help you the rest of the way. Like, if you can go prove that this works one time with one record company, I will help make connections to you, to anybody else you need. And I was like, deal, like, accepted. And I literally Googled how to start a business. Like, I knew nothing about starting a business. I never thought about starting my own company before. Like, it was literally my first Google search was how to start a business. And, you know, I sort of went from there. So I was as green and as inexperienced as anyone could be. I made every single mistake you can make along the way. And, you know, the one thing that I had in my corner, which was just so incredible, was the support of a team of amazing marketers at Walmart who said, you know, we've got your back.
That's
we
so
believe
cool.
in this product. And, you know, they believed in the product because they saw the potential for it to be a really great offering for their customers. And so for the first 3 or 4 years, Walmart was pretty much our only client. Like, we were pretty much just making products for their stores. And we did tens of millions of dollars of retail sales on products in their stores with deluxe
wow.
editions of albums for everybody from, you know, Taylor Swift and Justin Bieber to like the Beach Boys and Kiss. I mean, we were, if there was a priority release that was coming out, we were partnering to make, you know, sometimes as many as like a 250,000 copies of the,
wow.
of the deluxe version, which was really, really cool. So that was my first business that I launched when I was, I guess about 26 when I finally started the company, 26, 27.
Wow. Wow, that's great. I love that. And I love the tenacity. It's believing in an idea, believing in yourself and not letting go. And I think so many people look at in the mortgage industry, it can be with so many companies still so archaic. And they have an idea and they go, they try to bring it to their own company that they're working with, or they'll change companies and try it here and there. Sometimes you just need to go out on your own. I love that journey. We got to talk about that another podcast about what you went through, because we do a lot of consulting in that space. And I'm fascinated by it. But talk about the growth. And then talk about what was the big moment that where it just all of a sudden catapulted you into the success that you're enjoying now. And then I want to hear learn more about the transition to becoming a keynote speaker and then, you know, walking away from the thing that you'd built and been so passionate about. Talk about that journey.
Sure. So, you know, it snowballed really fast. I mean, I remember probably, well, I had no idea how many small businesses fail, and I had no idea how mm-hmm. likely it was for me to, you know, crash and burn when I started my company. I'm glad I didn't know. You know, they say ignorance is bliss. I had no idea. I just thought, like, I looked around and I saw other people running businesses, and I was like, well, if they figured it out, I can figure it out. Like, how hard can it be? You know, people figure it out every day, and that was sort
so
of my attitude. And the deal that I made with myself and with my husband was, I was 26 at the time, and I said, you know, there's never going to be a better time for me to try to do this and fail. If I crash and burn, I'll just go get a job somewhere else. I'll put CEO on my resume. You know, it's going to be fine. But we don't have a mortgage. We don't have kids. We don't have anything that's making it, you know, difficult for me to do this. I was married at the time, so I was able to go on to my husband's health benefit. So I said, I'm going to try this for 1 year. And at the end of 1 year, if I've made a salary that's at least half of what I made at my day job, I'm going to keep going. Because I think if I can earn half the salary or revenue in the first year, you know, like to net to me, then I think I can grow from there. And I remember about probably 5 or 6 months into starting the business, I came across a statistic from an American Express research study that said fewer than 2% of women-owned businesses ever do $1 million in revenue. And I said, well, I'm going to do $1 million in revenue, and I'm going to do it before our first anniversary because I want to be in that club. That sounds like a really cool club to be in. And so about a week before we hit our 1 year anniversary, I got the PO that put us over $1 million in business. And
oh,
I was
awesome.
So proud because I was like, okay, I'm in that 2% club. I've done it. And that, of course, I exceeded what had been sort of my wildest expectations of how the first year would go. And what I sort of dawned on me at the end of that first year is, you know, I'd spent so much time thinking, what if it fails? What if it fails? What if it fails? I'd never really stopped to think, what if it's wildly successful? Like, what if I actually can do this? And what if it actually takes off? And so I found myself in this situation where, you know, I wasn't really prepared for the success. I wasn't really prepared for the fact that, you know, some of the largest entertainers in the world were coming to us saying, well, we want to work with you. And, you know, how can we work together? And some of the largest
brands
wonderful. Saying, hey, I've seen the lift that you've created. Because what we were doing was creating incremental product sales, sometimes to the tune of millions of dollars for our label partners and for our studio partners for these DVD and CD releases, video game releases. We are creating, in some cases, millions of dollars of incremental sales on products that would not have existed had we not created them. And then we were letting brands get in on it by doing shopper marketing promotions. So they were getting these sales lists too with all these cool displays, and we were integrating media. So we had, you know, all these cool TV campaigns we were doing with celebrities and brands, and it was working so well for everyone that it really just became, you know, one of those perfect storms where there was value being added all around. And that's really how it sort of snowballed, because we started getting a lot of press because people were saying, okay, we've got this startup that's, you know, entirely owned by females. It's, you know, they've taken no VC money. They're doing, you know, seven figures of revenue. They're working with the largest retailer in the world, and they're doing all of this without any kind of like technology play. You know, this is a non-tech mm-hmm. startup. So we started getting lots of press, and I was a PR major in my undergrad degree, so I knew quite a bit about how to sort of snowball it and how to take something, you know, small press and leverage it for bigger and bigger opportunities. And so that snowballed all the way up to us being invited to be on Shark Tank, which is obviously one of the biggest eyeballs.
Oh, no kidding.
Yeah, so we had, in the episode of Shark Tank that we were on, there were about 8.5 million viewers for the first airing. And then when it re-aired on network, it was almost 5 million viewers. And then wow. Every single time that the CNBC reruns happened, we would get a big spike. And a lot of times, I've had friends that have been on the show, and I've heard from other entrepreneurs on the show that once it goes to the syndicated, that doesn't really do a lot for them because they're B2C brands, like they're reaching consumers.
Right.
But because we were more of an agency targeting B2B, we had a huge bump every single time the CNBC show ran. So it became like this unpaid sales.
Oh, I know.
Sales force for us at every single time it would air. So that really helped grow the business. And that honestly became something that divided my attention a lot, because with the Shark Tank, I started getting a lot more offers for consulting, a lot more offers for speaking. And your question about making the decision to move away from doing the business and the consulting every day and doing more of the speaking. In 2016, my husband and I were ready to leave New York. Like, I'd been in New York for 11 years. I was over it. I grew up in Oklahoma, so I was just ready to start a family and not
yep.
be anymore. So I moved to Nashville, Tennessee, and just loved it here. And it just became a lot.
Love
running
Nashville.
A company with my team all still in New York and, you know, being here, and it was a lot of travel. And then when my son was born, I was like, I'm traveling for the business. I'm traveling for the consulting part of the business. And as I started getting more and more speaker opportunities, I just had to make a decision of, you know, I can't continue
yep.
to do all of these things and do them well, rather than feeling like I'm doing a bunch of things pretty good. I want to be like the best in the world at something. And so I had to just
yep.
say, what is the path that I want to go down that I think for the next decade gives me the opportunity to feel like I'm excelling and being the best that I can be, and also having the kind of family balance that I want for my life. And so that was the speaker.
So good.
So I made the decision to sell out the majority of my equity in the company to some partners of ours that have been partners for a long time. So it's been kind of like the best of all worlds for me for this year, which has been really
yeah.
exciting.
So talk to me about public speaking. What the objective, what's the goal, what's the opportunity that you see here? And you are an outstanding speaker. And anyone listening to this, if you're looking for a speaker for your event, I strongly recommend you go to Brittany's website and check it out. Get a hold of her. But talk about what's the passion, the purpose, and your why behind public speaking.
Well, thank you so much for those kind words. You know, my why is really teaching people how to connect their story with the stories of the people whose lives they have the potential to impact. And that's really what it's about for me. And when I talk about this idea of superfans and creating superfans, it's empowering you to change the lives of the people around you. And if you can do that, if you can figure out why you're on this planet, if you can figure out what it is
yes.
that you have the unique ability to do that's going to improve the lives of people around you, and do that every day and be, you know, feel blessed that you've been called to serve in that capacity and that you can, you know, touch people in that way, that's a great thing. And I feel like it's, you know, what's that saying, like the rising tide lifts all ships, or
yeah,
I probably
yeah.
got that wrong, but you know, the
yeah, yeah, rising tide lifts all boats. It's the concept. Yeah, it's so good.
Okay, it's I was gonna say that's like the concept. The wording might be a little wrong, but you know, that idea of if that's the reality we can all live in, like what a wonderful world, like what a fantastic thing. And I honestly never thought about mortgages. I knew nothing about the mortgage industry before my husband and I bought our home, and you know, I was, I don't know, 30 something, and I'd been living in New York for over a decade. So it just was like not even on my radar. And we had such a horrible experience buying our home, like on the mortgage. And the more I talked to friends, everybody was like, oh yeah, that's, you know, that's like a lot of people have terrible experiences. And I was like, but why? I don't understand. Like this is, you know, probably the largest purchase most people are going to make in their lifetimes at one of the most stressful periods, you know, like at least I know when I was buying our home and we were moving across the country to a state we had never been, where we didn't have cars and didn't have families and didn't have, you know, any sort of home base. Like it was so stressful. So to be going through one of the most, you know, difficult to understand, challenging things at a time where you're sort of the most like mentally stressed out and taxed out, I was like, this just, I can't understand why there are so many people that aren't like doing an amazing job at this. And, you know, on the flip side of it, on the side of loan originators, like it seems to me like such a superpower. Like you're somebody, if you're working in the mortgage industry, you're empowered to change people's lives in a really amazing, incredible, fantastic way. Like you're literally making dreams come true. Like you're literally helping someone's dream come true with home ownership. And, you know, there's just such an opportunity to make that an incredible experience rather than a terrible experience. And so that was really what sort of sparked my interest in the industry.
Well, I'm so glad you're bringing your message to the mortgage industry. I believe that housing is the fourth most transformative thing you can have happen in your life. I think powerful religious experience is the number one. Second is meeting a wonderful spouse and meeting the love of your life. And the third thing is, you know, watching your children be born, if it's a guy, or have birthing a child, and you're with child again. So congratulations. So excited
about
that.
I am, yes. Thank you.
So excited. And then the fourth most transformative thing is when you buy your home or refinance. And I think that's why I believe housing, we need a reinvention of the process. And that's what we're committed to do so that we create a great experience. And it's what's really interesting about it is something that the bad experiences out there, which there is such an abundance of. You see, it's one of the. I was on with Neil Cavuto one time at Fox, and he said, "Dave, I have to realize." I says, "I keep thinking that newscasters are the least loved people in the United States." He says, "I think the mortgage industry is actually below us." And I cracked up. It's sad but true. And so I'm really excited about your influence to raise the bar. Give some suggestions. What are some best practices that our listeners could walk away with from talking to you today or listening to you today that you talk about also when you're doing public speaking?
First of all, I love that Neil said that. And I love that you and so many others are working so hard in the mortgage industry to change that perception, because I think it is making a difference. And, you know, the one thing I would say, one takeaway that is applicable, not just in the mortgage industry, but really in any industry, is something called the platinum rule. And we all grew up with the golden rule, which is treat others the way you want to be treated. The platinum rule takes that a step further, and it says, not everyone wants to be treated the way you want to be treated, because not everyone has your same experiences and knowledge and background. So instead, treat others the way they want to be treated. And if you can do that, if you can follow the platinum rule and treat others the way they want to be treated, everything else will kind of fall into place. It's kind of like one of my personal goals this year was to read the entire Bible from start to finish, because I never had.
Oh, I love it. Oh, me too. Yes.
So I'm like, I'm done with it. But in the New Testament over and over again, they just say, like, if the only thing you're going to get right, like, if you're going to just pick one thing and do it right, just love everybody. And if you just love and respect everyone, the rest is going to fall into place. Like, don't worry about any of the other stuff. Like, if you just remember one thing, just remember to love everybody. And they say that, like, over and over and over again. Like, wow, that's, you know, that's really great advice. And it's sort of the same thing, this love, respect, the platinum rule. Like, if you just treat others the way that they want to be treated. And the only way you're going to know how your customers want to be treated is to ask them. Because not everyone is going to want to be treated the same way. From big things about, you know, all the financial stuff, down to, like, the seemingly small things of, you know, how do you want to be contacted? Do you want me to text or do you want me to call? Do you want me to email or do you want me to write? How do you want me to be, you know, following up? Like those seemingly little things. Don't treat everyone like a number or like another person on your quota sheet for the month. Treat everyone as an individual who has their own needs, who's reaching their own dreams by buying this one individual house. And if you can do that, if you can follow the platinum rule and treat everyone as an individual,
I love
you are going to be well on your way.
I love the platinum rule. Brittany, we got to have you back to talk about that. We share the same values. I just didn't realize that going into the interview, but we share that. I'm being interviewed on another podcast, and they asked me, what's my favorite business book? I said, Proverbs. I said, if we could just get that one book on leadership, it's one of the best books on leadership. I encourage that. The whole Bible's got just filled with so many good principles. Again, the main major one is, you know, how to love other people, but learn to love and love well, but it's learning their love language. And one of my favorite books is The Five Love Languages, and we all have them. There's some people that love to be hugged, and some people that will just find that the most offensive thing in the world. There's people that love words of affirmation. Other people will see that as something as superficial. So I want you all to think of an event that's coming up and invite Brittany to come and speak at that event. Whoever's organizing that event, share with them Brittany's contact information, which opens the door to Brittany. What is the best way for our listeners to get a hold of you?
Well, thank you, Dave, again, so much for having me on the show and for all these kind words. People can find me at my website, which is brittanyhodak.com. If you want to send me an email, it's just hello@brittanyhodak.com. So please feel free to reach out. And for anyone who's listening who wants a little more information about creating superfans, what that means, what that could potentially mean to your business and how to do it, I've got a free ebook up on my website. It's called the Superfan Wave, and WAVE is my acronym. It's a little bit like my Maslow's Hierarchy of Needs, but it's the acronym to help making sure that you're thinking about each level of customer service, and the acronym stands for Welcomed, Appreciated, Validated, and Engaged. So in the book, I go through each of those four levels and how you can make people feel welcomed before they ever even do business with you, appreciated at every step of the process, validated in all of their fears, thoughts, and concerns, and engaged with you beyond the point of sale, so that they're becoming these active referrers who are keeping you top of mind. Because a lot of times, like, the referrals that you miss out on are the referrals that you never knew there was an opportunity for, because the best referrals are the ones that are coming unaided. When somebody says, hey, I'm thinking about buying a house, and their friend or their coworker or their, you know, son's little league coach says, oh, I've got someone you've got to talk to for your mortgage. Like, it's not the ones that people say, can you refer someone to me? It's the unaided referrals that are the ones that are going to hold the most weight. And that's what you want to get to. You want to get to the point to where you've got these engaged super fans who are keeping you top of mind and are thinking of you because you've enhanced their lives in some way, and they want you to make the lives of the people around them better. So it's called the Superfan Wave. You can get it at brittanyhodak.com/wave or anywhere really on my website. There's links to it. And I really hope people find it valuable. I love hearing from people about how they've been able to take the principles in it and put them to work in their own lives. You're going to like it because there's a bunch of quotes throughout the books that are very Proverbs-esque of really great customer service and really great putting fans first. So there's a little bit of something for everyone in it, including some really great quotes that some of them sound like they could have been right out of the book of Proverbs.
Love it. Brittany, thank you so much for being here with us today. Thrilled and looking forward to having people get to know you and have you come and speak at their events. We're going to make sure that happens. Thank you so much.
Thank you again.
On December 30th, we've got Matt Reddick coming on. We're going to be talking about things you need to be thinking about in the new year. We're going to have Matt Reddick come on and talk about a new program called the Triada Plus Program. You will not want to miss this podcast. It's going to be coming up on the 30th. Anyway, it's called the Triada Gap Plan, and they have a health risk management, HRM program, health risk management program, where you actually get money back as a result of you signing up for this program. It's really interesting. It actually saves company money, doesn't cost money, and it saves employees money if they go through the health risk management product. Very excited about this conversation. So I want to say a special thank you to our sponsors. Again, we have Black Knight, Open Mortgage, Finastra, MBA, Lenders One, The Mortgage Collaborative, CMLA, as well as Velma, Knowledge Scoop, Vidyard, VendorSurf, our newest sponsor, and AI Assist. Thanks for listening, everybody. Look forward to having you back here next week.
You've been listening to Licken on Lending, a weekly mortgage market update with your host, David Licken of Transformational Mortgage Solutions. Join us next week, and thanks for listening.